Welcome to Minority Corner
with Aneke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
what you got brewing?
Girl, it is still February, so I got some black magic, and I don't mean witchcraft.
No, black people magic.
I mean black people magic, because that's what we are. We are magical. And you know what has we are so magical that we've been able to forgive white people for stealing our music all throughout time.
Keep stealing our lucky charms. What the fuck?
Well, I was so inspired by Justin Timberlake's performance that I was like, oh, he's not the first person to appropriate black music. How far back has this been going? So I'm going to take you on a magical journey. The history of white people appropriating black music.
Yes, I am all about finding out how that shit has gone down in our nasty-ass American history.
Well, girl, what magical things do you have brewing?
I am about to continue the trend of last week's Wakanda episode into this week's black comics that you might not have heard of.
I'm pretty sure I know them all.
I mean, you might be surprised by a couple.
Ooh, I can't wait to find out.
Intrigue.
Ooh, I am so intrigued that my nipples are hard.
Sexy intrigued.
My black nipples. Hey, it's Black History Month. Everything about my blackness is amazing for this month.
I'm glad you said that. I thought you were going to say everything about you is hard, and I was going to go.
It's Black History Month. Everything about me is hard. Let's go.
Whee!
Hello, 911.
What's your call? What can I'm the worst 911.
No, you're good. Thank you, 911 lady. I'd like to report there's a white man dressed as a lumberjack who is terrorizing the football stadium, and he used to declothe black queens.
This sounds. I can't tell if this is sexy or criminal. I don't even know.
I think his name is Justin Timberlake.
I get it. Now
it was
a riddle.
It was a riddle. It was a riddle.
It was a riddle wrapped
thanks,
in an
Simon
enigma.
Lady. Thanks. Thank you.
Are you sure you want to thank me? Because
you were very confused.
I am no Connie Britton. I'm
you
sorry.
You are not. So there's two things that just the gate that I wanted to tack on in this conversation.
Yeah, one, you really got us in there.
Happy Janet Appreciation Day.
Yay! What have you done for me lately?
Watch the Super Bowl.
I did not.
Yeah. We abstained.
Before we tackle that.
Yeah, what up, girl?
We've been off the line, off Linda tripping ourselves. We've been talking about Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder. But one thing that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
Did you notice the Janet-filled episode?
I did. There was a Janet-filled episode on Scandal. And it, you know I love anything Janet, but it seemed a little out of place.
It did. Bit.
Because usually the music's from like the 60s and the 70s, and they just went like full on Janet.
80s.
And
I know.
80s, yeah. And it was an episode directed by Kerry Washington. And
ooh, she's a Janet stan then.
Yeah. I just, you know, and I think How to Get Away with Murder is doing quite lovely, very twisty and turny and Scandal.
It's true.
I think you're ready to, you know, go out to pasture.
It is. And we both agree about that. I just thought it was kind of exciting that they Janet on there.
Maybe
trickled,
they did that purposely because that weekend was going to be the Super Bowl. So hashtag justice for Janet. You know what?
Oh my God, I love this theory. That theory makes me so happy. It makes me feel like Carrie is with us right now.
You know, on that turn, now on that note, that I love the episode. It was splendid. It was amazing. I just like, you know what? I have to apologize. I'm going to apologize to my mom right now because she called me the day after the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And she was like, oh, did you see Justin's performance? And Justin Timberlake's performance. And she was wanting to tell me something like positive, like give me some words of encouragement. And before she could get another word in, I was like, no, I did not. And do you want to know why? So I've hijacked it, already knowing that my mom wants to tell me something.
You're like, nope, going to snatch this away from you.
And it's like, I did not. Because one, the bullshit with Colin Kaepernick that he could not like get a team this entire year because he was doing a silent protest about the unarmed shooting of young black men in America, and then he wasn't able to get an NFL contract. So that was bullshit thing number one. Number
just
two,
exercising his fucking fundamental rights as an American.
They're always saying, can you keep your protest down? And they've been saying that since
it
like
was
the 40s.
Silent!
And it's not like he was a soldier, like, you know, not willing to participate in the national anthem.
He
is
played
like,
the goddamn game. He just knelt to the flag.
He's playing a fucking football game, like, you know, whatever.
Calm down. It's a game.
And then Justin Timberlake's performance, I was like, I will definitely was not signing on for that. Because, you know, back in 2004, he was participating in Nipplegate. And nothing happened to his career, and Janet was completely blacklisted, all that kind of stuff. And he could have, and you know, he has appropriated black music. He's never spoken out about any of like the Black Lives Matter stuff. In fact, made an All Lives Matter comment like about 2 years ago.
He did?
Very equivalent to All Lives Matter-ish. He could have fixed all of this by having Janet come and perform, and he did not. So no, Mom,
you know
I did not. I did not watch it. And she was just trying to say, oh, well, I think you're just as talented as him and could have done it. Like,
you're like, damn straight, and he's going to steal it from me.
He already did.
Okay, so here's, I have to say, I have been doing a little revisionist history, and I imagine the phone call went like this, James.
Oh, yeah, what happened?
Ring, 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 ring. Hello, this is Janet. Oh, hey, girl, it's Justin, remember? I remember. And then Justin goes, I'm doing the Super Bowl thing, and I think it'd be cool if you... Nope, hang up.
You know, I bet that is what happened.
I hope so.
Because she put up on Instagram, she like people are like,
yeah,
maybe
she was
Janet,
like, I'm not doing
she's
it.
She's like, and you know what? I appreciate that, because Janet did not want her fans tuning in on the hopes that she might show up and to be butthurt that she was not there. So she was, thank you. The Rhythm Nation thanks you. Miss Janet.
James, you also missed the third thing that he did to our people that is disgusting.
He wore cornrows.
Well, that, but he almost performed with a hologram of Prince upon that thing. And Prince has been known to say that holograms of dead stars is demonic. He literally said that. He's like, that's demonic. I don't want to do it. Also, Justin Timberlake and Prince have a long history of hating on each other.
I was going to say, Prince, if he was alive, wouldn't even perform with Justin Timberlake. He said, and I quote, when Sexy Back came out, he was like, but Sexy never left. Who's bringing it back? So, Justin Timberlake, you don't need to perform. So I'm like, so no to all of that. No to all of that. And like, I don't know. For me, it's like a very easy, I love nachos and I love Super Bowl commercials, but I don't know. Yeah. It just was too much going on and everybody protests in their own sort of way, but I just was not going to participate.
I did not watch it.
I had sushi with Ashley Nicole Black and our friend Jeremy Carafin.
Ooh, I have to give a quick little shout out to Ashley Nicole Black, who is going to be on my favorite show, fucking motherfucking Drunk History.
Ooh, all the snaps. And she did not mention that when we were having sushi.
Which is crazy. Okay, and here's also the crazy thing. So the only reason that I know this is because it was promoted by Comedy Central on my Twitter feed. So that's how close of friends I am with Ashley Nicole Black. But she...
Oh, sidebar. Ashley Nicole Black is one of the writers of Full Frontal. She was on our show about a year ago and went to college with her at UC Santa Cruz.
She's also a correspondent on Full Frontal.
On Full Frontal, yeah. She's like the really funny one who's amazing. Continue.
Yes. Thank you. And it's true. We needed to get some backup. Go listen to that episode.
Yeah.
The episode that she's doing for Drunk History is on Nichelle Nichols, who is Uhura from Star Trek. And you know my connection to fucking Uhura. Uhura is exactly 50 years older than me. We're born on the same date, 50 years apart. I fucking love her with all my heart. Black women on television, fucking breaking down the mold. And Ashley Nicole Black is doing her Drunk History on her. So I feel like, I don't know, maybe in the universe that's supposed to happen, that somebody that I know is doing something on Nichelle Nichols on television.
Yeah, this is divine order. Of course this is happening, Aneke. It was prophesized. Mm. Decades ago. This is the Lord moving. She moveth in mysterious ways.
She's like, I'm gonna give that one to Aneke real quick.
Boom. Speaking of amazing women on television, I just would like to my auntie, Angela Bassett.
Okay, now we're at this level now.
She's my aunt now.
Angela Bassett claims her as family.
When I talk to her as you know what, but we really are. Going back to that Black Panther red carpet, purple carpet.
Purple carpet.
We were all family. family that night. I'll tell you that.
That's the truth.
My Aunt Angie, my Aunt AB, her show, 911, I would just like to do a formal plug. Go watch. She's executive producer on that show.
Yes, she is. She's fucking boss lady on that motherfucking show.
She's also, Angela Bassett is cleaning house right now. Like, she is back. Mm-hmm. She's in that new Mission Impossible movie.
She looks actually kind of good. I wish Tom Cruise wasn't as crazy as he is because... I've always loved Mission Impossible, and this one looks amazing.
But here's my thing, is that, like, they brought back everybody from... I'm still bitter about Paula Patton. Why did she disappear? And no one said boo about...
Was it Paula Patton, or was it Tandy Newton?
Paula Patton was in the fourth one, and they brought back everybody except for Paula Patton. I think she was doing World of Warcraft, which you fucked up on that one, Paula. She thought it was going to be a franchise. Choice. She thought
bad
it was going to... You chose wrong, Paula
B. You chose wrong.
But you know
wrong.
What? It's hard, especially because they put her up and make... They did, you know, oh, we have a black
they
woman.
They gave her a
put
fucking
her up
underbite and painted her green.
They did the thing that they always do when they get a black woman in science fiction, and they paint her a color.
They're like, make her not black.
She's still a color. She's playing an ethnic role still.
Well, Ving Rhames is still in it, so.
Yeah, I know, but you know, it's the black women solidarity. But
it's true. I take you on that.
But you know, I'll tell you this. Black Panther is going to change it all. It's going to change it all.
Everybody's saying it's great. Everybody
it's already
like,
got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I love it. I'm so excited to see it. I'm sure there's some... I have to wait like the plebs, but I'm ready to see it.
I'm actually going again next Monday, which is still before everybody else gets to see it. It's another screening.
All right, James.
Oh my God.
I wish I lived in New York because I would have forced my way into you taking me to that one.
But you know what? It's so interesting because, like, the new song, All the Stars.
Beautiful song.
Such a great song. Kendrick Lamar and SZA. Am I saying
yes.
that right?
Mm-hmm.
Old Man James. Love the song.
No, you got it.
Music video just came out. And
I want to see it.
It's beautiful. And it's like, this is a new movement. I can just sense it. Everything is going to be about Africa coming in these next few years.
Yes.
Just get ready. It is Africa's celebration. Like, it's always should have been celebrated. And on that note, I then read this article that Star Wars, the guys who did Game of Thrones, they're now getting their own Star Wars series.
I don't know how I feel about that.
And here's what I rolled myself out. I was like, oop, Kathleen Kennedy, you made that call too soon. Because she's going to go watch Black Panther and be like, ooh.
Yeah, she should have been like fucking Ryan Coogler.
Yeah. And Joe something or other, who's the writer of it. Because they do such a great job of it. And like,
I can't wait.
Game of Thrones, the guys are the ones who are trying to do that Confederate series. So.
Exactly. That's why I'm rolling my eyes at it. Not to mention, Star Wars has been getting progressively more diverse inching along.
I don't think they're up for the challenge.
They are not up to par for that.
So that's what I was like, ugh, I don't think that they would do good for this.
I did not like that. Mm-mm. I saw that article and I rolled my eyes and said, good grief.
Well, Charlie Brown. Speaking of Black Africanness, you told me you have some dish on a queen Nefertiti, okay. Not Queen Janet Jackson like you're all thinking, and not Queen Ramonda of Wakanda, the other queen.
No, not quite. The true OG
of the queens
is Queen Nefertiti. So
what's she
I'm
do?
About to get real nerdy with y'all right now.
Okay,
so
let me get my glasses. Hold on.
Okay, first I'm gonna get real pop. Okay. Here's the pop part, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the Today Show.
Ooh, not with Megyn Kelly.
No. Well, yeah, okay. Megyn Kelly's on there, but she's bombing slowly. But this was at the very beginning with Hoda and Samantha Guthrie, the main one, where
Hoda
took over for Matt Lauer.
Right.
So all
love
the props
me some Hoda.
To Hoda.
I met Hoda when I first moved to New York.
That's right.
With her cameras.
Yeah.
She gave me a Metro Pass. It was like, welcome to the city.
I fucking love her. She's the best. I love Hoda. She can't do any wrong for me. No. So
yeah,
Hoda and Samantha Guthrie were doing the main morning component. Sans Matt Lauer, get out of the fuck out of the way.
Dead to us, Matt Lauer.
And this one guy was like, "Oh, we did a scan of a mummy's head that we found that we believe to be the mother of King Tut." We're calling it Queen Nefertiti, which I'm going to give like why that's not true, to the bust. And they created a bust. You know how they do like the facial reconstruction with the muscles and all of that?
Technology.
They unveiled it and it's basically like your next door neighbor, soccer mom, white lady.
Oh, what? How?
And everybody was like, exactly. That the whole world all black people collectively said what you just said.
Who did that? That also made me think about like when white people hear stories of like Moses and stuff, or like any of the characters in the Bible,
they just visualize white people,
which is insane to me. Look at a map.
Go to Africa. Look at the descendants from Africa who you don't want in your country, by the way.
I guess they do think that. They're silly.
Everybody Google it. Look it up. So here's the thing that really pisses me off that I want to talk about. First and foremost, darken that skin tone.
Oh, no.
I know.
It looks like a soccer mom dress for Halloween.
I told you.
It is a white lady.
I told you.
I want to throw up. She's in like,
whoa,
clearly.
I
want to throw it because it's like, it sickens me because it's like, after just seeing like Wakanda forever and this, like, she's in this African, like, it's clearly Africa garb and it's a white lady.
Okay.
It looks like an anthropologist who went to Africa and dressed up.
Nah. Okay. So now you see that, right?
Yes. I wish I hadn't.
I will say that there was a lot of people traveling around at that time. Like, people are saying that Cleopatra probably wasn't even from Egypt. She was probably from Greece or something. But back then, with Queen Nefertiti, it was mostly Egyptians. Also, here's the first fucked up thing. Mm. Hoda is 100%
Egyptian. Yeah.
Her parents are Egyptian and she unveiled that bust
in front of her. And like, this woman looks like she doesn't even look like Hoda. Looks like an Egyptian woman. Like this other lady does not. She looks like Gladys from down
she
the
does,
street
from on, HR
on Muckleberry Lane.
Okay, so here's the thing that here's nerd talk right now, and I know that our beginning's getting a little long, but I just want to cover it. First and foremost, everybody knows that Queen Nefertiti was not the true mother of King Tut.
Yeah.
Queen Nefertiti was the stepmother to King Tut. Mm-hmm. You look in any article, you do your motherfucking research, which these fucking people should have done. Yeah. Librarian Aneke is pissed. And you know that it's documented through hieroglyphics that Queen Nefertiti was King Tut's stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the woman that they found, they DNA tested that mummy as King Tut's mom. So that woman that you see there should have had darker skin tone. But it's technically, that is King Tut's mom.
Oh, okay. But her name's not Nefertiti. It's like...
It is not Nefertiti. You know who it is, though?
Who is it?
It's also his aunt.
Why? I literally just feel like I'm sitting live at an episode of Mari Povich, and this is like... The King Tut episode of Mari Povich. Auntie, you are the mother.
Yes, auntie mom. That's why King Tut had a cleft palate, an overbite, a club foot, scoliosis.
Wow. He really had the cards dealt to him. See, this is a good PSA for don't sleep with your family.
Don't sleep with your siblings. Don't
diversify.
Do it.
Diversify. I know these roles like want to keep the bloodline, yada, yada. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It really doesn't.
You know what? That's probably why he died so soon, because he was he was a bubble boy. We didn't have the technology then to put him in a bubble.
This is why I get so mad, because people, noted scientists, were like, oh, looking at his body, we think that he was hit in a chariot. And then later on, people were like, nah, he had a club foot. He couldn't even stand up. Get this, James. That's why there's a lot of canes around his fucking tomb. Look at the room, scientists. If there's hella canes, he had to walk with a cane.
Yeah.
Did you know they also tested? He got malaria like 7 times in his 19 years that he was alive.
Really? Hey, I would like to see that true life story of King Tut. He had a hard life.
He did. And he died. So that bitch right there is not Queen Nefertiti, because just research Queen Nefertiti. She's his stepmom. So these people on the Discovery Channel
Which, that, you know what, that bodes really well, because that means that if they can get a show on the Today Show and talking to them, we can, because we're way more researched than them.
We got our facts straight.
We do. Speaking of getting our facts straight, should we get into the corners?
Because I'm ready. It's your corner, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to take you on a magical hop into my time machine. We're going to solve a mystery, young lady.
I love it.
Well, we're going to solve the mystery of white folks appropriating black music through time.
You made that sound way more exciting.
Get ready to be sad.
Appropriation.
A tale as old as time. It's even happening recently with this Nefertiti
appropriating
bust.
Appropriating her face.
So appropriation, it's a tale as old as time. But we're going to do Appropriation the Musical for today's episode. Appropriate. Let's define. We're going to define appropriation for this segment for today.
Yeah, what does it mean? What's appropriation?
You've appropriated it. No, you've defined it. You've appropriated appropriation before.
I'm taking it.
No, you've defined it better than what I'm going to do, but this is my definition for today, because definitions can change. I'm going to just define it as the action of taking something for one's own use.
Okay, I like that.
That's what I'm going to go for today. So, talking about music. Yes. So, nearly all modern American music is deeply rooted in Black African traditions.
American music.
So that's what I said.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Just clarifying.
American music is all rooted in Black, specifically African traditions.
That's where you get a beat.
That's what we brought that beat. We brought it over there. So blues music, and then we talk about blues music, it has its roots even from the slave trade. So it was featured from like West African music. And that's where you get like a lot of call and response.
Polyrhythms,
and that's still heard in modern music today. And so, like, and blues music came out of that, and it's one of like the first sort of modern music that was sort of transforming out of there. And you even like in the field when they were working, they had different songs, and there was like hollering back and forth in the plantations. And then once emancipation came about in the mid 19th century, the blues was then born from some of those songs that they were singing, passing down ancient stories and traditions, and even just music to keep their spirits going and the power of that. So that's also the power of
music. I love it because sharecropping was basically slavery. So let's not forget that.
So they still had, you know, their own, they were still bringing those stories and that music. And again, for African cultures, that's how they were passing down stories as well, was through music and through dance. Half of the blues comes from African traditions, but we will give this that the other half does come. There's some European folk that is also influenced into
like
it.
Like bluegrass you get the harmon- and stuff.
Right. And they give it its more 12-bar progression, so it gave it its more sort of form and roots and sort of in that way. And even the guitar, like we didn't have the guitar over there in Africa. But the harmonica comes from Vienna.
Oh, interesting.
And it was a cheap instrument that was easily accessible for Black folks. So they just sort of...
Nice. So a true hybrid. Blues is a true American music form.
Absolutely. But you can, yes. So talking about like appropriation, again, a tale as old as time. So I want to kick things off in 1917.
Okay.
Jazz hit the mainstream.
Hell yeah, jazz.
So an author, Perry Hall, he wrote this book called African American Music Dynamics of Appropriation and Innovation.
Check it out.
He notes that jazz specifically comes from Louisiana and the Creoles, who created jazz during Jim Crow. And so the Creoles, you know, being the part of the French, had some of that French sort of influence as well. So you can get some of the French musical influence
there.
So
James, can I just interrupt really quickly? Because I've always been a little confused about this since I don't have roots in Southern. I mean, I do have roots in like Virginia roots.
Right. But you don't have like the, like, you want to talk about the Creoles?
Yeah, because I've always been a little confused because I've seen white people say that they're Creole and I've seen Black people say that they're Creole. So I'm kind of, and this is me purely being ignorant. Is it mixed up people? Is that kind of how they view themselves? Or is that how it came to be?
Great question. I don't really know for sure. I had assumed that the Creoles were mixed Black French people.
Okay, yeah,
that was my kind of understanding.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was curious.
Because the Creoles had to find their own sort of identity because when Louisiana was then purchased by the U.S., like they were treated differently because in the French culture, they were treated like in one way, but they came over to America and obviously
you're Black.
Americans hated
them.
So you're Black and we don't
so
like
they're
you.
They're interracial people then.
Okay. Yeah. So they helped create this jazz music, which, you know, comes from like the Louisiana area and has a lot of like rhythmic and tonal and improvisational senses along with these string ensembles. And the word jazz, in fact, derives from the Creole word jazz, which is a slang term for sex.
Ooh, sex music.
Yeah, that's literally what it is. Because you're just kind of making it up as you go along and yeah. just putting it
Isn't
over
it
there.
Jass, but like with J-A-S-S?
Yes, yeah. that is it. Jass. I want some Jass. So sadly, so 1917, why are we talking about 1917? Yes. Because sadly, the first jazz record to be released on the mainstream populace was that of the self-proclaimed original Dixieland jazz band, which was five white musicians.
Thanks so for taking our stuff.
They were the first mainstream, again, even though where it was already coming from. And again, the jazz's roots also come from the blues, right. and the blues comes from Africa.
Black people. So basically, what you're saying right now is... One, jazz started in a primarily black art form. The main reason it got popular, some five white guys decided to play it, and that's when people were like, ooh, now I like it.
Yep, and another thing that you'll see throughout the theme of this is, like, who has access to this? Who has access to getting things to the mainstream? And yes, music is influential, but... This is a common theme that we might see unrolling. So then we go to the 1920s, and Paul Whitman, who was later dubbed the King of Jazz, and Whitman, he is a white man, he was noted to have tamed the primitive rhythms
Gross!
Of original jazz.
What the
jazz
fuck is that language?
And became more acceptable to white audiences, and he... help mainstream it from the underground of African-American social spaces into... And he essentially earned $1 million in a single year in the 1920s. And, like,
that's
no
a
black
lot
person
of money
earned...
back then.
And no black person made that much money off of jazz. I think even today, no... No, I'm sure there's
some. Somebody's making... Actually, all these little, like, little pumps, little whatever, little Uzi Vert, they all are making money.
Yeah. Okay, good. Finally. Finally.
Sounds a little like Justin Timberlake.
Well, spoiler alert, I will tell you, you'll never guess what inspired me to take this historic look at the appropriation. Well, there it is. I was watching Justin Timberlake and I was like, how long has this been happening? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we go to the 1930s and Benny Goodman, white guy, became the king of swing. Mm. And he was known to make jazz exciting. So
he
again,
made
like,
jazz
just,
exciting with his damn clarinet. Get out of here.
And again, he's doing what other black artists are already doing and taking some influences from there. But because he's able to have access to this mainstream audience and get his music out there. But he did, on one hand, he hired Teddy Wilson, who was a black guy. He played the piano in 1936. So he was hiring black musicians Charlie Christian, who played the electric guitar. Oh. And he was really good. 1939, playing that electric guitar. Okay. So... Now let's go into the early days of rock and roll, which even rock and roll is essentially just a speeded up version of the blues. And there was a lot of early day black rockers, if you will.
There was that one woman, right?
Oh, I will get to her. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So it's funny because we help create rock and roll, but now it's mainly a white music form. Mm-hmm. So even in the early days, record labels felt that they should inform their customers of the race of their musicians. So they categorized black artists under race or blues music and white artists under country or hillbilly music.
Both are bad.
Everybody loses in those categorizations. Do you know? Nacky's gone. Do you know? In fact, Columbia Records mistakenly thought the Allen Brothers were black.
Stop it! I'm still.
They did.
I still can't they get were, over they hillbilly were... music. Fucking assholes.
They're like, Julie, don't you listen to that race music? You listen to good old hillbilly music. So, 1956.
Okay, yes.
You might have known this guy. Elvis, one of the
cool, guy.
King of appropriation.
Yes,
so
number one.
He released Hound Dog in 1956. Yeah. And it was simultaneously top of the pop, country, R&B charts, probably the hillbilly charts. And the race. And he stayed at number one in the top of the charts for 11 weeks. It went on to sell over 10 million records worldwide. Jesus. But it was first recorded 4 years earlier by Big Mama Thornton, a black woman from Alabama.
Exactly.
She was a blues singer. Mm-hmm. She toured in the 50s and 60s with Muddy Waters, B.B. King, and even Janis Joplin, she was inspired by a lot of these black female artists.
Yeah, hello, listen to her voice.
Yeah, and she was inspired by them. But like similar to what ended up happening with the Rolling Stones, thought they were an R&B band, which I'll talk about later. they were trying to be an R&B band, but everybody kept pulling them towards rock and roll because they were influenced by people like Chuck Berry.
Who is rock and roll? People need to just admit that Chuck Berry is rock and roll.
And we are going to touch on him as well. So, but here's the sad thing is that Big Mama Thornton just never had the same acclaim that, you know, Elvis had had, didn't get the same recognition.
Yeah.
She died at 57 in 1984.
She was young.
Yeah, she even had, like, some of the people that went on to sing... Oh, no, that's someone else.
But the thing that, like, really struck me by what you just said is who she toured with.
Yeah.
She toured with, you said, Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry. These are all Black people that were...
B.B. King.
Black people that were able to actually break the ceiling and make it in. Yeah. And they still couldn't even bring her in. And she's the one that fucking did it for Elvis. Like...
Yeah. Yeah. And he, like, you know, ripped that song. And it has a history of, that's just like one example of like Elvis ripping off of like music of Black people. And another person, like Chuck Berry, like who you were talking about, to me is like the original, like, he fucking kicked the door open for rock and roll music. And he really, like, legendary.
Yes.
But everyone wants to, like, give this credit to, like, Elvis. And in fact, name any major band of like the 60s and 50s, they all credit Chuck Berry with their music stylings. The Beatles, Rolling Stones, Aerosmith all cited Chuck Berry as being an inspiration.
Yes.
In 1955, he really crushed into the scene with the song Maybelline.
Yeah.
There was really nothing else at it at the time. Like, he just was able to have, it was like blues, country, and R&B, and it just had this very urgent and exciting way that he went about creating his music. He did Roll Over Beethoven.
Oh, I love it.
Too Much Monkey Business.
Yes.
School Day, Johnny B. Good, rock and roll music, Sweet Little 16, Brown Eyed Handsome Man, all these songs.
Yes.
You mentioned someone else earlier of someone that you thought was actually like the one originators of rock and roll music who, were you talking about Big Mama Thornton?
Yeah, I was talking about Big Mama Thornton.
There's another one.
Tell me.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who has never gotten... She has never gotten her due.
Okay.
She was strumming a guitar long before when Elvis was just a toddler.
Yes.
Teetotaling around. She's a queer Black woman from Arkansas. And she shredded the electric guitar.
She was
very fascinating because she belted praises both to God and secular pleasures.
Ooh, she knew. And she knows it.
And she broke color lines touring with white singers and as well. But she was just doing, she was doing gospel music, but also she was doing rock and roll. And
I
she
didn't
was
even
a
know
huge
her.
Superstar. She had a song called Rock Me. Mm. That was one of her big hits. And she hired Grand Old Opry and the Jordanaires, who backed her, but they eventually ended up going to go back Elvis. So, like, she helped them get their start. And it's even cited that Elvis was really inspired by the way that she was able to pick a guitar.
Wow.
So, just taking notes from
this
Black woman.
Listen to Black women, and let's stop exploiting them. Can we stop doing that, please, guys? Thanks.
A great call. So essentially when rock and roll got like exploited by folks like Elvis, Black musicians such as Ray Charles and Sam Cooke, that we had to create our own thing. We're like, okay, well, they took that. We can't get any credit for that.
Yeah, time to do something new.
So they started to fuse rhythm and blues with more gospel influenced harmonies. And they created soul music in the 1960s from that because... You know, how to do something.
Which is like the best invention, let's be honest, right now.
Which would eventually get stolen by, you know, the likes of like Justin Timberlake and stuff like that.
Yes.
So when we move into the era of rock and or roll.
Okay. just keeping it open.
You've got, you know, so I said earlier, you know, the Beatles, they give credit to the blues. The Rolling Stones give credit to the blues. And they were really inspired by, like, Muddy Waters. George Michael, actually, his first Grammy Award, he got his first Grammy Award with who? The Queen of Soul.
Aretha Franklin.
She was like, come on here, baby. Let me help you get an award.
Okay. She's, like, only so helping we have all a this- few people. If you can get it, get it.
Yeah, if you can. I mean, she's a tough,
does not
she's
like
a tough one to crack.
Our Patti
LaBelle.
She does
not like people.
I know.
So I wanted, the Rolling Stones I thought were really fascinating when I was doing this deep dive. And they were from, you know, in the 1960s, they started to really catch fire. And they were born in this British subculture that was obsessed with blues music. Oh. It was like these white British kids who were obsessed with like blues music. Mm. And again, they kept trying to do... R&B music. People kept bringing them into like rock and roll. Mm. And one thing about the Rolling Stones is they do at least some, they recognize, and apparently Black people really love the Rolling Stones. They
I like the Rolling Stones.
Well, and the media in the U.S. hated the Rolling Stones because their music too closely blended to Black sounding
music. Racist ass America. Motherfuck. Yes. Jesus.
In fact, when they first were coming over here in 1964, the media kept giving them dehumanizing comparisons, saying that they look like Neanderthals and animals.
Oh, so they were treated Black.
Yes. They were essentially treated like Black people. And they had like their song, Street Fighting Man, which has one of their opening lines is, "The summer's here and the time is right," which is a direct homage to Martha and the Vandals, 1964 hit, Motown hit Dancing in the Streets, which I didn't realize was a song that was pretty much about the summer riots that were happening in 1960.
Yeah. I didn't know that. All I can think about is David Bowie and fucking Mick Jagger dancing around singing that song. 80s, ruining it. Yeah. I'd rather think about the Street Fighting.
Yeah, but apparently some of their songs were they would tour with Tina Turner, yes, and B.B. King. They were really trying to stay close to like, they're like, but we're R&B.
They tried, they did.
Brown
yes.
Sugar. Yeah, that was the next thing. So, you know, not like, getting it correctly
I'm
all the
sorry,
time.
I'm like ahead of you all the time. I need to stop.
No, but they did a better job than I would say
the Beatles.
Justin Timberlake.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Or the Beatles, who Justin Timberlake never gives any sort of recognition to, I would say, Black music, its roots, or even like showing up for things like Black Lives
exactly.
Matter.
Exactly. All he does is go like Timbaland, Pharrell, and that's literally his only Black acknowledgement.
That's it. Sidebar, I wanted to give just side credit to Jimi Hendrix, who he had a really tough path because like here it was in the 1970s doing rock music, which again has its roots with
60s.
Black people doing rock music. In the 60s, and then he died in the 70s, mm-hmm. 1970, I think it was. But it had like he was when he died, critics cited him as an alien the rock world.
He's just a Black guy doing rock music, his own music.
And a 1973 critic, she wrote this, which I thought was really interesting. She wrote, I don't know if it was a he or a she. I don't have their citation. But this critic wrote, this person, doesn't matter what their gender is. "The night Jimmy died, I dreamed this was the latest step in a plot designed to eliminate Blacks from rock music. Ooh. So that it may be recorded in history as a creation of whites. Future generations, my dream ran, will be taught that while rock may have had its beginnings amongst Blacks, it had its true flowering amongst mm-mm. whites. The best Black artists will thus be studied as remarkable primitives who unconsciously foreshadowed future developments." And this is in 1973, and it's true.
Yeah, she knew what the critic knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a quick little fact about Jimi Hendrix.
What up?
So I was recently privy to the knowledge that Jimi Hendrix was enrolled in the army and was discharged for being a crazy person. He wouldn't.
Good for Jimmy.
I know. He wouldn't have bought.
Because that would have been what, Vietnam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Stupid ass war.
He wouldn't abide by anybody's rules, and he got caught like masturbating in like a room somewhere.
That's how you get out of there. I'm just gonna be like, I'm gonna suck all the dick.
James,
oh, you can be gay
you're
now.
You're at the point
damn
now
it.
Where, I mean, this is...
They're not going to draft
yeah,
me?
Yeah, that's kind of one of the good things about
what?
Being old. We're not draftable
what?
Now. Yeah.
First, I can't be on the real world. Second, then I can't be on the Disney Channel.
Do you want to be drafted? Do you want to be on the Disney Channel?
I want the option. Someone, you know,
it's good to have options.
To be in High School Musical 5.
I feel good about not being able to be drafted. Sorry, young people. I love you. Bye.
Let's get into rap music,
yes.
Okay?
Hip-hop.
And you're like, surely this appropriation train stops.
No,
it's trucking full speed ahead.
It is.
So
yeah.
Afrika Bambaataa even quoted that, again, rap music has its, goes all the way back to the motherland, as we've, you know, said, with its call and response and chants. Mm-hmm. And coming from like, you know, jazz rhyming, he said the 60s, you had the love style of rapping with Isaac Hayes,
yes.
Barry White, and the poetry style of rapping with the Last Poets,
yes.
the Watts Poets, and the Milton style of rapping with brothers like Malcolm X and Minister Farrakhan.
It's so true.
So, but then in 1981, who gets credited with originating rap music? Blondie what? In Rapture. People have tried to credit she Blondie legit, with the first
okay,
run.
Okay, Blondie the band, legit, I can't be mad at them for the fact that they had Fab Five Freddy on that album for Rapture. She name checks him. So at least Blondie gave credit, but they also should have really reinstated that it was black people.
Right.
In the queer community too, because let's be honest, that's where a lot of the queer black and Latino community is where a lot of those dance records came from.
Oh, absolutely. And has also even just Caribbean. A lot of the original folks have a Latin American and Caribbean origin. In the late 1970s, that's when rap was really starting, hip hop music was really starting to form with DJ Kool Herc, DJ Disco Wiz, Grandmaster Flash, Afrika and Bambaataa. Mm-hmm. And then in 1986, who is the first to win number one hip hop album?
I don't even want to know.
The Beastie Boys with License to Kill in 1986. And then in 1991, whose was the first hip-hop single to top the charts?
Stop it.
Ice Ice Baby, Vanilla Ice.
No! He's a... Oh, God.
It gets even worse.
Pay attention to the Grammys.
In 1993... Oh, well, this is just the top of the charts. Oh, okay. But he did win a Grammy for it, didn't
Probably.
He? Probably. So in 1993, Never Forget, in form
Snow?
I like your boom boom there. So Snow, who is a Canadian rapper, he spent 7 weeks at the top of the Billboard charts.
Wow.
And he went on to earn a Guinness Book of World Records spot for earning both the biggest selling reggae single and highest charting reggae single in history. It is actually technically reggae music. And here's the funny thing about that. So why did this Canadian boy start singing reggae? Because around that time, Jamaica had an influx of people moving to Canada. Yeah. So you had people like Leroy Sibbles and Jackie Minto coming up to Canada from that time. So he was obviously influenced, but he was getting the notoriety that other folks weren't. And again, we have to ask ourselves, why is this happening?
This is so really frustrating. And this is all things that I know, but also hearing it again, I'm just like, oh, God.
And when you hear it all together, I wanted to essentially 13th you.
You did.
You know, when you
are.
When you watch 13th, you're like, oh, I knew all these things separately
together.
When you hear it all together.
You're doing the 13th of music right now.
So, right, then we move to the man who inspired this whole entire segment. 2003, Rolling Stones named Justin Timberlake.
Here we go.
The King of Pop, which, okay, you can have that.
Kenny, it's Michael Jackson's title.
Ooh, which also he stole, like, you know, again, influence stole whatever Michael Jackson's
Wasn't
sound.
Wasn't Michael Jackson still alive in 2003?
Oh, yeah.
Rude.
I wonder how he felt. Yeah, that's, hella rude. And even remember, like, 2014, Iggy Azalea got dubbed by some the queen of rap music.
She did?
And Joss Stone got awarded the Reggae Billboard Artist of the Year.
Joss Stone?
Here's the thing. This is all fine and dandy for white people to sing this music and do it. But the problem comes is when black folks are not able to get that same notoriety, those same dollars. And listen, we never receive reparations for our 40 acres and a mule. We never fucking received
fucking
it.
Meant
and
that.
So when you have, again, it's such a history of access that white people had access to radio stations. Mm-hmm. Who controls these record labels still to this day? White folks, and when it behooves them, they will go ahead and allow a black artist to be the face of that music. But when it doesn't, they will much easily get a white face to do it instead and steal that sound.
Yep.
Happened with Motown. Motown's music was getting stolen by white
Left
people, and Motown decided to beat them at their own game and make white sounding music and put
Guess
it out
what
there.
Happened. It took off.
I want to just point out something, too, that BET put together this guy. I want to give him credit. At Richie_Colazo.
Okay.
He, in 2017, put together a series of tweets, which essentially wrote, like, that blackness equals cool and profitability.
Yes.
And then he... In this modern era, especially in pop music, that most white artists will have a coming of age phase where they then go hip hop R&B.
Yes.
Right? And he
looking
says
at you, Miley Cyrus.
Oh, God, right, yeah. He said that they either make R&B to prove how raunchy and grown and sexual they are, or hip-hop to show how hard and street and rough they become. And to white people, all black music is adult, because and black music to them is taboo, and blacks are always seen as older, as we have
noted. It's so true.
Ugh. Right? And so now they have this adult image, and it's essentially like, you know, these white people, white folks who run over to like, ooh, mom and dad, look at me, I'm being dangerous. Like, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm being rough. And it shows a sign of maturity. And then once the coming of age era is done, they return back to a more seemingly sort of, you know, white, humble face. Look at Justin Timberlake's new album.
Exactly. Well, his album case in point. Is... I listen to it and it's boring.
I'm not going to listen to it.
You're but not like, missing out.
The face
out. It's
of
terrible.
It is a white man in a lumberjack
with some fringe.
Outfit,
exactly.
In the era of Trump, like it's kind of odd to me. It's kind of odd to me that that's the conversation that Justin Timberlake decided to have. Mm-hmm. He's putting a new album out and that's the direction that you went. At least Eminem went out and did a, you know, a rap of sorts against Trump.
Eminem has cred for reason because he lives his truth and he gives prop to black people when is due. But also he needs to acknowledge that he's been put on a platform for a reason. A lot of times we need to like take some of these artists out of context, and Eminem's one of them where it's they get the notoriety, they get the fame, they get the publicity, they get the titles because, like you said, all the record executives, all the critics, all the people writing, all the people in power want to help their own people. So therefore, that's why they get to promote all of these people and ignore the creators of the actual music. So like, that's the fucked up part. And that's why I, for people like Eminem, I have to give him credit because he's fighting against it. For people like Justin Timberlake, though, is reveling in it and loves it.
Yeah, because Eminem has even said, the only reason why I'm winning all these awards is because I'm white. Mm-hmm. Back in 2004, Forbes wrote that 80% of rap music was consumed by whites ages 13 to 34. Mm. So there's 45 million hip-hop consumers, and 80% of them are actually white folks. Mm-hmm. And so there's this commoditization of blackness. But here's what's interesting is that it has it's a modern day minstrel show because you have that white people are obsessed with this idea of like, ooh, listening to these black people listening to this music. There's a connection to it and there's a kinship to it. Like you said, like we can connect to it. And but white people listening to it, not that you can't listen to it, but like it's kind of alarming to me at the rates that they're obsessed and listening to it. It's a way for them to rebel against their parents and show how grown and mature that they are. And it's the same way that people used to love menstrual shows because they're just like, ooh, look at the black people. This is so fascinating. It's so gritty and dangerous and interesting. You know?
I mean, it's the same vein and you totally hit it on the head. We are the non-exotic exotic. Being African-American, we're just as American. We've been here for 1,000 years, yet we look different and we have maintained our culture. I tried to, even though it's been tried to be squeezed out of us as much as possible. But we've held on to it tooth and nail. So it's here, it's an American culture, but it's still seen as other. So that's why it's used as a way of rebelling. And it's so funny that you say this because my way of escapism, I don't know if you're going to like this, but
oh, what is it?
I've been watching the most fucking British white royalty shit. And I think it's because of the same thing. I'm just like, I need to get out of myself. I need to look at something that is so alien to me that allows me to leave my existence for a little bit. And I think that's why I watch that stuff. And I think that's why people feel like they can exploit and live in and utilize black culture because it's a way to get out of yourself. What we're asking for is, sure, enjoy it, but pay tribute. Give props to the people who created it. Like,
and let those people receive the financial due that they are that they deserve. Like Jamaica's so rich with tourism. They've put out so much. They've had so much influence on our music that it should be. You know, there should be so much more going back to that country, and there should be festivals and concerts there because it's like such a birthplace of so much of our modern day music.
Thank you,
and
as a Jamaican.
It does make it. and it does make it confusing when you have black producers like T.I., Pharrell, Timbaland, and Usher who sign off off on a lot of these white pop artists, but at the same time, I do look at it as them just trying to make a buck, right, like they're white producers. And they're like, you know, and so it is kind of complicated and messy, but I do see a reckoning. Mm-hmm. That Black Panther album is going to be dropping on June 9th, and there is a celebration of Africa through black faces that is about to happen.
Yes.
And I am so here for that. So,
James, I'm about to, I looked at that set list for the Black Panther album. One, we had a big Black Panther extravaganza, and I'm so glad that you brought it up, because I just want to really touch on the fact on how monumental this is for people who aren't black. Mm-hmm. Marvel, huge. Part of Disney, mm-hmm, huge. Huge. Mm-hmm. Like, legit the most giant conglomerate out there, right?
Yeah.
This movie is not a Tyler Perry movie. This movie is not like a side Holly Berry movie that we've talked about. This is a huge, big budget, supported by, will be a part of a universe movie that is not only done by a cast of brilliantly black people in a country of Africa that's seen as non-colonized, that celebrates black African culture, that's directed by a young black director, that is the soundtrack is done by black stars.
Yeah.
That is monumental.
This movie has been a long time coming, but I'm so glad that it waited until this moment, because if it would have been done 10 years ago, it would have been a white director. Right. It would not have been the same thing. So I wanted to give props to in Black History Month, celebrating, you know, black culture, black music that has influenced so much of what we put into our ear holes today. Mm-hmm. And Justin Timberlake, I can't side eye you enough.
Go kick some fucking rocks. Clearly you're a ruse. So James, that was a journey. I am.
Yes. Thank you, Chuck Berry, Big Mama Thornton, and Sister Rosetta Tharpe, for all of your wonderful work.
Thank you.
Give me that blackness. Give me that blackness. Part two.
Yes. Part two. Because I'm black, y'all. I'm black, y'all.
Me too. Me too. We're coming back for part two, right?
Yes, we're coming back for part two that I teased last week.
Yes, you did.
So last week we talked about we did James's adventures in Wakanda, which is, I'm so stoked. I mean, you just heard in the last section, I'm so stoked.
Yeah, get excited.
So about Black Panther, which is going to be on the screen. And then we also talked about the origins of black people in comics in the 1940s.
Yes.
So this week, I'm going to continue that love and continue black excellence by going through some black characters in comics. I don't want to say superheroes because some of them aren't.
Mm. They're still a hero in my heart.
Yes, that you might not have known about. So you will not hear any mentions of Storm or Black Panther or Luke Cage, because y'all should know.
You already know them. And if you don't, go look outside your window.
Get to know them.
Go see
them. Ask yourself why you don't know them.
Yeah, that's the bigger question.
If you're not a comic fan, then okay.
Okay, I get it. All
but
right,
if you're a comic fan and you don't know who Luke Cage is or Storm.
Who's Storm? Get out of here.
Okay, then.
Or stay here and learn
stay
something.
Stay here. Yeah,
but you're not going
to
learn that.
To the podcast, so.
We're like, get out of here. They're like, okay.
We're like, no,
actually,
no.
Back. Wait, we love
no,
you.
No,
we
we're wrong. Sorry.
Went too far.
Okay. So I got these articles from these characters from two articles. The first one is from CBR.com, and it's called 26 of the Greatest Black Characters in Comic Book History.
That are not Storm.
Storm is in there.
Okay.
Storm's in both, and I glossed over Storm. I was like, I know you.
You're like, I get you, Storm. She's like, I'm here too. We're like, Storm,
we
know.
We got it.
We
you
get it.
You get all the
lightning
in
a toad.
Right now. So this one is written by Mark Buxton. And then the next article that I pulled from is from BuzzFeed, and it's called 17 Black Superheroes and Where to Read More About Them by Daniel Kibblesmith. So
thanks, Mark and Dan.
I kind of didn't choose. Yeah, you guys pulled it together and I love it. Okay, so the first one, you ready?
Yes.
Her name is Martha Washington.
Ooh, I love it.
I wanted to start with that one because it's...
She sounds like a character on Scandal or like, you know?
Or of American History.
I thought she sounded familiar. I was like, where have I heard that before? Is that Olivia Pope's mom?
So good. Okay, so Martha Washington was created by Frank Miller, who is famous for Sin City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to read from the quote that I pulled. Marsha Washington may very well be Miller and Gibson's greatest creation, a young woman born into a crumbling, satirical, dystopian future. Washington's story details how she became a champion of the downtrodden. Through a number of miniseries and one-shots, Miller and Gibson tracked the life of the brave young woman who epitomizes the spirit of dignity and equality, even in the hellish future society she was born into. Washington is a reminder that one person can truly make a difference, even in the ugliest of worlds.
Wow.
Sounds cool, right?
I'm surprised by Frank Miller. Sometimes he's a little misogynistic.
I know, and he poured all of his saris into Martha Washington.
Are her boobs popping out?
She is militant as fuck.
Okay,
she's
cool.
In some fucking camos.
Damn.
She is ready. So I'm also going to be giving comics where you can find these characters.
Awesome.
So for Martha Washington, you want to look for Give Me Liberty, #1, and it came out in 1990.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one. Destiny Ajaye.
I thought you could say Destiny's Child.
No, close enough. Ajaye, child. Destiny Ajaye was created by Mark Bernardin, Adam Freeman, and Afuya Richardson. I don't know. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
So, at a young age, Destiny Ajaye developed a keen strategic mind that rivaled that of Sun Tzu. With her ability to inspire others, Destiny united the gangs of South Central Los Angeles to go up against a corrupt LAPD. We always gotta be hella political in ours. Anyways, sadly, Destiny's work became all too real after the tragic events of Ferguson, Missouri. What?
This is a recent one.
This is like, let's tie everything together. and Destiny went from a high concept character to a powerful modern day symbol that stood against marginalization and oppression. With stories of authoritarian corruption all too frequent these days, characters like Destiny mean more than ever. So you can find Destiny Ajaye in her first appearance was in pilot season Genius, #1, which came out in 2008.
But I'm not surprised. Like, I feel like a lot of black characters are fighting, you know, just the realities of the world.
It's true.
Because we don't have that luxury to just like, all right, I'm going to go ride a dinosaur today, you know?
Fireworks! Pew, 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 pew!
Hey, listen, Jubilee can shoot those fireworks as much as she wants.
That's true. She's also one of the first Asian characters out there. So
she
I don't want to.
Dazzler's the one you should be going for. She's like, okay, there I'm we go. A pop Dazzler. Star. Look at these lights. My creator's on a lot of drugs right now. Literally, Dazzler's like Studio 54. I did too many drugs
Dazzler's
and I got
to
draw a character.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I
Dazzler.
Know. Oh my God. Okay. #3.
Yes.
Mr. Terrific.
Oh, I know about Mr. Terrific. Go on,
go on. Oh, you
do? Yeah.
You're going to know some of these. People that are actually comic book people will know a lot of these.
I believe is currently his character. Is he a DC character? Does it say?
He is DC, yes.
Yeah, he's actually on the current season of Arrow. And
ooh, good.
In it, this character, he's gay in the series. And I don't know if he eventually became Mr. Terrific, but he's playing the character who will become Mr. Terrific. I stopped watching.
Nice. Oh, well, you know what happened.
Listen, once I got that Marvel contract, I was like, I ain't got time, DC. I ain't got time.
I know. I'm gonna be saying some DC people, but you can handle it.
He black, so we cool.
So, yeah, exactly. Gotta pick something. Okay, so Mr. Terrific was created by John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake. Another second generation legacy character, Michael Holt, carried on the tradition of fair play established by the Golden Age champion Terry Sloan, the first hero to be known as Mr. Terrific. So a lot of these characters, I didn't include a lot of people that were like, I'm picking up the
mantle,
the baton.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I wanted an I liked origin characters that were black, but Mr. Terrific's one of them that I slipped in there. Holt essentially became DC's go-to inventor and strategic genius. That's why I picked him, because I like it when black people are portrayed as smart.
Mm-hmm.
carrying the legacy of Mr. Terrific into a new age. Holt starred in one of the original New 52 series before becoming a vital part of the Earth 2 book. Mm. And then, like you said, this year, Michael Holt became a major part in the CW's Arrow as played by Echo Kellum. Yes! Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they're saying, with fans eagerly waiting to see if he'll join the fray as the costume crime fighter. Not James. James gave up.
Mm, yeah, tweet me. Let me know if it happens. And my response, I'll be like, okay, I like it.
Cool. So his first appearance was in a comic called Spectra, volume number 3, number 54 in 1997. So get to those libraries, check it out. Next one, Bronze Tiger.
Yes, I'm going to be this person for Halloween.
Are you, though?
Okay, I spoke too soon.
Created by Dennis O'Neill, Jim Barry, and Leo Duranoa. One of the greatest combatants in the DC universe.
Mm, yeah, that sounds like me.
Okay. the Bronze Tiger really came into his own as a member of the Suicide Squad.
Oh.
The Tiger found a voice and purpose as one of the most complex characters that appeared as part of Amanda Waller's conscripted crew of operatives. So Amanda Waller is a black lady. I didn't put her in here. She's been played. We've talked about her many times.
We talked about her last week. She's been played by both Viola Davis and Angela Bassett. Whichever hot older black woman is hotter at the time, that's who DC gets in there.
Even though they draw her like a dumpy aunt.
They do. But you know what? What I do love is in Arrow, they made her like this like hot 20-something.
Oh, but, see, they always got to make her hot. But you know what? I'm not mad at it. I'm really not mad at it.
Because originally she was this frump-a-dump black woman.
She's a frump-a-dump.
Which, hey, frump-a-dump ladies could have their things too. But like,
it's true.
So
it's okay to be frumpy.
Black women are portrayed as just like, bump, 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 bump.
Okay. So Amanda Waller, black woman, is in charge of the Suicide Squad. Don't go see the movie because it's
terrible.
But read the comics. Yes. It's literally these bad guys that turn good, and Bronze Tiger is a part of that.
I can play Bronze Tiger. I'm a complex character, Amanda Waller.
This is what you're going to do. One of the greatest martial artists in the DCU. You're also one of the few morally upright members of the squad.
Don't cross the street without looking both ways.
Okay, you ready for this now? This is going to bring it all home.
Okay.
The Bronze Tiger, played by Michael Jai White, made his live-action debut on Arrow.
Ooh, did I do that? No, I did not. That was my part. I thought you were going to say it was Taj Mowry and I was going to drop my panties.
I'm sorry. No, well, Michael Jai White ain't nothing to shake a stick at.
You know
either.
What? I would. You know what? After Taj Mowry, if you guys don't know this, I have a secret love crush on Taj Mowry. I stalked him on Instagram for a few days.
We went through that together.
Nugget was there to hold my hand. After he breaks my heart, I will be picked up by
Michael Jai White.
Yeah, I will. The voice of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, in the animated series.
Didn't he do Spawn too? Another character I did not put on this list because you should know.
You should know Spawn. Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
You can find the. It feels right.
It feels right.
Tweet us. Let us know.
Google it.
Bronze Tiger. You can see him first in Richard Dragon, Kung Fu Fighter, number 1, 1975.
I bet Richard's a white guy doing kung fu.
Yeah, but I mean, 1975. Let's look at the dates.
Yeah, that was fair enough.
You know what? I'm just glad the Bronze Tiger came out in 1975.
At least they didn't call him Black Tiger.
True.
Yeah.
But they probably had too many black things, so they were like, Bronze.
Which is why this is not a spoiler. In the new Ant-Man and the Wasp, Lawrence Fishburne is playing Goliath, who in the comics was called Black Goliath, but they're just going to call him Goliath in this
Good,
movie.
Good, because we don't need to differentiate,
we
assholes.
Know he's black.
Yeah.
I would have never known had you not titled him that.
Thank you. Okay, so next one, Firestorm. Have you heard of Firestorm?
Mm-hmm. Yes, continue.
Oh, okay.
Firestorm's also right now on, he's on Legion of Heroes, the spinoff from Arrow, and yeah. And Firestorm, it's an acronym. Firestorm's an acronym.
Legends of...
Legends tomorrow. Of the Hidden Temple or Legends of the DC Heroes. Keep track.
You know a lot about DC. Okay, so Firestorm came out, created by Dan, Jolie, and Chris Cross. As one half of the second incarnation of Firestorm, Jason Roosh became an indelible part of the character's history. Since fans first met Jason, he has been linked to the Firestorm identity, eventually combining with Ronnie Raymond and others to form the heroic Nuclear Man. Roosh served as the inspiration for the Firestorm currently appearing in the DC Legends of Tomorrow.
There it is.
And has ensured that representation will always be a part of Firestorm's matrix. You can see Firestorm in his first comic, which is Firestorm number 1, which came out in 2004.
Do you know who plays the other half on Legends of the Hidden DC Temple?
Who was that?
Victor Garber plays his other part. Oh. Who's like, they form Firestorm.
He's like a Broadway star.
He collected those TV checks.
That's a weird combination.
He did like the first two seasons, and he was like, okay, I'm out.
Wonder. That's weird. Well,
he was just guest starring on Arrow, so he wasn't even like a serious regular on Legends of the DC Temples.
Yes,
I don't know.
Okay, let's get through this. Static.
Static Shock. Static? Sorry, I just get so excited because I know
screaming
I'm testing. He's black, and he had a cartoon series.
Yes. So Static, created by Dwayne McDuffie, Robert L. Washington III, that is a black name if I've ever heard one, and John Paul Leon. Anyways, Static was originally marketed as Milestone Comics' version of Spider-Man, a young hero who had to balance his family and school life with the world of superheroism. But the young hero with the ability to control electricity quickly became so much more than to many people. Static was the first black comic book hero to star in his own cartoon, which you just mentioned, which made a generation of fans, James is a part of, fan aware of how cool the character could be. Static remains a well-loved hero by James and will likely be the forefront of the upcoming Milestone revival.
What I like about Static Shock is that he his creators are black, and so there's an authenticity into like just his experience, and so I think there's something that's very black voices writing these black characters.
It's what we need. You can see Static in his first appearance was in Static number 1, 1993. That sets you right in the demographic.
You're like, oh, this is for you. I go from Power Rangers to Static, and that is my Tuesday afternoon after I eat my gummy bears watching Gummy Bears.
I know. Exactly.
That's my afternoon.
And gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Give me that Kool-Aid pouch.
Okay, so the next one is from the comic called Saga, which is very popular right now with a bunch of people. And this one, so I'm pulling from another article, so the quotation is going to be a little bit different. Alana is a winged alien. She may not be black in the traditional sense, but she's definitely drawn in. She's drawn darker tone, dark hair. She looks black. And she isn't technically a superhero. She's more like Han Solo. If Han Solo were a mother, a veteran, and a fugitive from two warring civilizations, holding down a job and potty training a toddler while the universe is trying to kill you, sounds pretty heroic to us. Also sounds like black ladies.
Yep.
Saga is one of the most popular and critically acclaimed comics of the past decade, and it's a great place to start for any new comic readers. Basically, a race of people with wings have been at war with a race of people with horns for as long as anyone can remember. When two of them fall in love and have a baby, this is their story. And Alana is the one who falls in love with the horned character. She has wings. It's really, you should check it out. A lot of people, especially at my library, we have Saga. People check it out constantly. Yeah. It's very diverse. The male character in it with horns, he is drawn in a sense with Asian features. So it's very diverse. The first one, I would just get Saga Volume 1. The first three volumes are in hardcover. It came out in 2012.
Cool. And I was just looking. I thought I had heard murmurs about it becoming a movie, but I just saw the creators said currently no movie is on the way, but they wouldn't say no to a musical. I think they really like it as a comic right now, and so they're just doing those stories like that, so...
I feel like it's one of those stories that it really thrives in comics.
Sure.
Just looking at the cover, it's like the two of them And she is just full on breastfeeding and staring straight at the camera.
It would probably have to be so more of like a, like, it's like The Watchmen can never be a movie, but it might be able to be a series. You know, like some are so rich and so in depth, mm-hmm. and they can't have all these Hollywood bigwigs mucking around right. in it.
Yeah, and get some unknowns. Like, a piece of me wants to, like, put some characters to be in there, like, but I'm like, no, get some unknowns.
Get, like,
to
play some, them. Get, like, a young James Arthur M.
Yeah!
Yeah, he's up and
what,
coming.
To play Alana?
Hey, I'm very, you know what? I've got great versatility.
You're versatile. You are versatile. Okay, the last one. You ready?
All right, give it to me.
Lobo.
Oh! He's from D.C. Does he ride a motorcycle?
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of a different Lobo. There is a Lobo that goes right. against Superman in the comics. But, okay, who's this Lobo?
Oh, this guy. Lobo. An old West adventurer of a wealthy, unnamed African-American gunslinger named Lobo.
I love it.
What his calling card is, on the foreheads of criminals, Lobo would leave a gold coin imprinted with the images of a wolf and the letter L.
Mm.
Because Lobo means wolf in Spanish.
Yeah. Like that Shakira song.
Is there a Lobo Shakira song?
Yeah. The Spanish version's called Lobo.
She's a she-wolf in her
hair. That howl in that song is so weird. You're just dancing and then she's howling in the background. Like, it's weird.
Shakira is
Let it out so it can breathe.
Okay, so Lobo, the reason that I picked Lobo as the last one is one, he's weird. He's a fucking gunslinger. I love it. In the Old West, you don't hear much about black people being gunslingers.
Not.
People are just like Django. And I'm like, that came out 3 years ago. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
So like, that's cool. And this comic came out in 1965 and 1966 for Dell Comics. So I don't know if you could get a hand on it, but if you can, let us know, because Lobo sounds so cool and his picture looks really cool. It's like him all like badass and gunslinger.
Well, what I like about that, what's so dope about that is like it also was showing like black artists and black storytelling that was also outside of the civil rights movement, which I think is also important to be able to have. Because like you were saying earlier, you were like, oh, we're always, you know, fighting in the streets and yada, because it is part of the black experience. But you're right. Why can't we get to like do fantasy things as well and ride magical dinosaurs or go back in time past slavery, but go to like
I fucking love a unicorn. Give me a fucking unicorn. Fuck
yeah. So
I don't name it the black unicorn
because we get it. I'm black and I got a unicorn that may or may not be black, but I get it. Heavy handed. So I think that's so cool.
Thank you. And go out, enjoy these characters. Spend your money, buy black comics, buy black comics written by black people, support Black Panther, because if we support Black Panther, we'll get more of these things made.
So true. And vote with your dollars.
Yes. Let's get that Saga TV show.
Oh, woo!
Wrap it up. Wrap it up. Wrap it up.
Safe podcast, y'all. Stay safe. Well, that is the end of our episode. What? You know what? We kicked off Black History Month last week, and
we
revved it up another notch.
We're keeping it going throughout this fucking month. Fuck.
Yeah. And you know what? We might even spill it over into March. So get ready.
Black History Years.
Yeah. But because it's also Women's History Month, we'll do Black Women in March.
Yeah, that's me.
So that's you. Mm-hmm. We should talk about Aneke every week. No,
it will get boring real fast. March 30th, you're going to be like, oof, God. And then she played oboe.
And then she wore a very smart outfit. That is very fashionable and amazing, because that's how you roll.
Thanks, James.
Well, y'all, we want you to get involved in the conversation, and there are many ways to do so. We are on Twitter.
We are on Twitter, Minority Corner with a K.
We are on the Facebooks. We have a special Facebook group called the Corner Kids Playground. And
join it.
There's a lot of great conversations that are happening. A big shout out to all the Corner Kids who are in that playground, who are posting. Yes. We have some super posters in the group. You're just so fabulous. You just make social media such a great and amazing place. And we want to say thank you to all of you.
Thank you. I mean, me and James are in there. We see you and we love it. So keep it up. And you guys are really supporting each other. So it's beautiful.
It's a great safe space, which is really just a beautiful thing. And I just feel so grateful for the beautiful community of Corner Kids.
Mm-hmm.
A big thanks to our editor, Dr. Dunderdale, for doing all the magical surgery and editing to make this podcast sound as amazing as it is. And a big thanks to Brownout for continuing to let us use your music. Thank you, Brownout.
Thank you. We really do appreciate you, Brownout, for your jams, keeping us lively, keeping us upbeat.
And funky. And thank you to all of you for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together, we're the majority. Have a good week, y'all!
I'm Hal Lublin.
I'm Danielle Radford.
I am Michael Eagle.
And we are the hosts of Tights and Fights, Maximum Fun's newest podcast dedicated to all things wrestling.
We'll be talking about Sasha Banks, the Women's Revolution, Sasha Banks, the brand split, and Sasha Banks' wigs.
And we'll also be talking about wrestler fashion. Some wrestlers wear too many clothes. Some wrestlers don't wear enough clothes at all.
And I'll be doing impressions of all your favorite wrestlers.
New episodes Thursdays on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Yeah, Mark.
Hey, buddy.
Oh, hey, what's up, man?
So I'm at this mafia restaurant.
What?
I'm going to go in and ask these guys what they think the best pasta shape is.
Mark, they're probably eating...
I have a hunch that it's probably ravioli, but... I mean, you know what? That's a good idea. Whatever they're eating, I'll just take a look in their bowls.
Why don't you
see what they have.
Maybe
there's supposed to be a big meeting there today.
Can you see it from the street? That sounds really dangerous.
I'm just going to go inside and ask.
Don't bother them. They're probably eating,
Look, I'm not threatened by them.
How about we tell them what the best pasta is on our podcast? We got this with Mark and Hal.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Thank God.
Tuesdays at 9?
On MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.